My favorite correspondent who sends me the best information, Jeb Card, he listens to some of these radio shows, and he listened to Banal of America. Is that how you pronounce it? Tim Banal? I never listened to it, but
no idea.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Look, Todd, I know you're a big conspiracy theorist, okay? And you believe everything, man.
It's not
you're
true.
So naive, man.
There are no aliens in Roswell, and contact lenses aren't made out of amoebas.
They are,
they
too,
are, dude.
Wait, did you see that?
What?
Chupacabra. He just ran down the aisle, Todd. You better find him.
We got a lot of time still. Let's talk a little bit about conspiracy, because I said on the end of the program, and you mentioned it on your Twitter feed, that you've heard it from other people too, that it's going to be an unfortunate big year for conspiracy, I feel. And this Sandy Hook thing's insane. I don't know what these people are doing. I don't know what frustrates me, what drives me crazy, because I believe the government does lie to us, and I believe,
of course they do,
yes,
yeah,
and I believe they cover things up. And to be quite honest, like, this is not going to go off on a crazy tangent here, but, and hopefully by the time I'm going to rush this episode out in the next couple of weeks, so it'll still be relevant. But as someone who's heard a million conspiracies, and as I said, forgive me, this is going to sound even crazier, but this crazy thing with the football player and the and the catfishing, and what, is he lying? Is he not lying? What did he know? When did he know it? It's like, to a conspiracy buff, this is like amazingly awesome and a beautiful story to behold, you know, and also a terrible thing in a lot of ways too. And you know, but to me, it's like, it's the one white crow that proves that not all crows are black, in mm-hmm. a sense. Or it's like, see, there are crazy things happening. There are crazy weird things happening behind the scenes, you know, that don't amount to a bunch of dead kids in a school in Connecticut. It might just be a crazy, but there are conspiracies out there.
For sure.
I don't even know where, you know, I just went off on a rant there, so.
No, it's a good point, because it brings up a couple things that I think conspiracy theorists, have that are different from maybe the rest of us, and I don't understand. I can't even comprehend. How conspiracy people who like conspiracies think. It boggles my mind. I can't wrap my head around the idea that someone would believe the ridiculous stories about. It started with Aurora. It was only like a day or two before you started hearing the conspiracy
right.
around the Aurora shooting, and it took hours before you. It's almost immediate now that we start to hear these conspiracy theories pop up. A couple things that I think. That the conspiracy theorists do is, for one, they assume everything at face value. So, like, every bit of information, that comes out in this 24-hour media cycle, you know, they're trying to come up with this information so fast. So, a lot of what comes out is speculative or it hasn't been confirmed. You know, the first thing they got wrong was the shooter's name. And then that turned into conspiracy, part of the conspiracy. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
We're going to get those first bits of information probably wrong because there's so much confusion, and we're not going to get a straight answer because maybe they don't even know the straight answer yet.
Exactly.
The stream of information coming out is going to be confusing and it's going to be conflicting. That's what we expect. I mean, if you have something happen traumatic to a group of people, they're all going to come up with just slightly different stories about it. They're going to remember something just slightly different because our brains are far from perfect. Our memories are terrible. And if we're stressed, we do a bad job of remembering, and we do a bad job of relating back to another person, and the story gets changed. So what these conspiracy theorists don't seem to understand is messy data is the norm. It's going to look confusing. In fact, if it was too perfect, it was probably concocted. You know, I mean, that's
yeah.
the way I think about it. And another aspect, being a government employee, and then the people saying that the government is, on the one hand, we're completely incompetent. We can't, you know, do the budget. We waste money all over the place. But yet we're so sophisticated that we can keep these secrets and concoct these elaborate plans. Which is it? Are we incompetent or are we spectacular? It can't be both.
I don't know, though. The government's a pretty big entity. Don't you think it could be compartmentalized enough where...
No.
Okay.
No, I think that if one person knows a secret, You know, they can't even keep secrets about who they're, you know, having affairs with. They cannot keep secrets about such a huge thing over all this time. And if, for things like UFOs and stuff, I mean, or especially with the 2012 conspiracies that were going on that NASA was hiding information from us, was completely ridiculous because you have thousands of amateur astronomers all over the world looking at the sky every night and they're not seeing the planet Nibiru coming at us, you know. So, I don't think you can hide it in the government, in the system, and I don't think you can hide it on the outside. So I am not convinced that there are, sure, you're right, there are government conspiracies. We've definitely shown that to be true. But we know that there are because they've come out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, somebody snitched. So that's what happens.
So you're saying where are the snitches for the other conspiracies?
If there's no snitches, I don't think that there's a real conspiracy going on there, because I think that the snitches naturally come out. And if we're talking about UFOs being hidden since the time of Roswell, no, it's not happening. Because there's, nobody has said a word, and Roswell is, in my opinion, completely, you know, concocted, and has some kernels of truth in it that just got changed over the decades. So, this whole thing about the government hiding things for decades, I cannot buy it. There's just no evidence. In fact, the evidence shows that we just mess it up and leak and give away our secrets. That's what the evidence showed. So
we may have to agree to disagree on this point, I guess. because I'm not like a crazy, I'm not like a big time conspiracy, even like follower, if you will. Because that's exhausting. I've said this on the show before. That's like you have to live in a world where every piece of news that comes out, you have to fit, you know, for every square peg that comes out in the news, you have to shave off the edges to fit it into your round hole.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's, to me, I'm lazy, inherently lazy, so I cannot do that. So that's not even a possibility. But I do think some of the, you know, I guess like some of the big conspiracies probably do have some kernel of truth. And I, you know, like JFK and UFOs, let's say. Those are the two I would probably, you know, put my money where my mouth is on. And I think that you do have people that did snitch, but they either lacked credibility or were marginalized by the media. I mean, there's always, and this is an argument we have on the Year in Review show where we bemoan this in a sense, where it's like there's always some, you know, prime minister of you know, the fourth most important affairs of a country, you know, who served in the 70s, who's like, yeah, I saw a bunch of UFO stuff. And it's like, that doesn't do us really any good, you know, because the French, you know, because 1975's French Minister of the Interior was like, I saw documents on UFOs.
Mm.
So it happens, but, you know, it's never anybody good.
Well, just follow up on what you just said there about JFK and UFOs. I think you're right that there is some secrets being held because not all the information did get out or got out correctly.
Hmm.
And I think for various reasons, you know, it either was not captured correctly, information was not recorded correctly, it was lost. Government loses stuff all the time. It's not a conspiracy that we got rid of it. We just lose it because there's so much stuff and paper. So I think the things getting lost is something we have to assume happens. And also, there was basic, I think, security issues where a lot of this stuff is not going to be able to come out because of security issues. So yeah, it's, I think what most people, I think all people miss when they go through their lives is they assume that there's a one-to-one relationship or that you can draw a line from A to B. And I don't think that's true. I think it's way more complicated than you ever imagine. It's more complicated than that. And people don't understand that there's so many variables that go into our lives every day and the way people interpret things and what happens to them, so many variables that we can't even grasp how complicated things are in some way. So we have a hard time explaining them. So when we try to explain them in a straight line, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit that straight line. It's too complicated.
Okay, so you're saying like, you know, there's a myriad of influences on people and events that we don't really take into consideration is kind of what you're saying.
Exactly.
I certainly agree with that point. You know, To go back to that football player's story, though.
I know, that was crazy. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing where you're like, well, the truth is stranger than fiction. What is the, you know, what
right,
is, you know,
yeah.
where, you know.
And at the same time, the Lance Armstrong story was going on.
Hmm.
And it was just a strange week, and I did a story that was like the sports week in lies, you know, because it was, that was what was dominating the news at the time, was all these elaborate stories that were going around that were constructed either by the football player or then by, you know, Armstrong over all these years. And we fell for them because they sounded reasonable at the time. We believed in that person. It was a good story. It was a hero story. You know, it made us feel good. We bought into it. We weren't critical about it.
Right. Well, that's another point that, you
yeah.
know, it's like, that's
human.
The thing about this whole story, too, is it's scary. We're almost getting into just general conversation about, regardless of skepticism and the paranormal, but it's sort of like, you know, they don't, it's scary that these narratives can be foisted upon people without, and then it turns out that the people who were doing the foisting never actually did the legwork to prove that this dude's girlfriend ever existed or anything.
Mm.
It's kind of scary, because then you wonder, you're like, well, what other stories have I heard that
sure.
aren't true?
But, I mean, by default, we want to believe people are telling the truth.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's the safe bet. That's the default position. It's not always going to be the right one, but it gets us by most of the time. Some people are a little too gullible, and they fall for everything. Unfortunately, like the elderly will fall for the scams on the telephone and give away their social security numbers or their credit cards because they want to trust people, but they don't realize that there are some scams out there if people are trying to pull a fast one on you. But I think our default position is to assume that people are telling the truth. So when they say that these things happen to them, it's, I once asked Joe Nickel this. You know Joe Nickel.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him, yeah.
And I've had this experience as well, because I did field investigations for geology issues. So I would go out and I would talk to people, and I said to Joe, what do you do if somebody is obviously lying to you? You know that they're lying to you. And I've had people say, this thing happened to me, and I know it didn't because I have a recorded bit of information that showed
right.
that was not happening at the time. And he couldn't, he gave me an answer, but it wasn't a good one. Because what do you do when you know that person is really not telling the truth? Or you don't know, but you suspect. How do you treat that person? It's very difficult to get around that idea because you want to trust them and assume that they're telling you the truth. But you have this other information that's saying that they're not, and you have that dissonance going on. How do you handle a person like that? We really don't have a good way of dealing with people who we think are not telling the truth. It feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really thought of it that way, but yeah, it's difficult. You can't really, well, I've kind of run into that here on the program at times in the sense
yeah,
where.
Yeah, I imagine you would.
Where I've expressed it this way, where it's just like, I can't, it's not that I think the person is lying, but if it's a personal anecdote, I feel like I get hit up against a wall where I cannot really go any further. You know, they'll tell me the story. I'll ask some questions that I think are kind of holes in the story, but I can't, there's no really further that you can go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
That's the difficulty in a way with a lot of this anecdotal stuff, too.
You weren't there. You know, so you can't get any more information out of them than what they're telling you.
Exactly.
So you can't pull any more information because you weren't there. And this happens to a lot of skeptics as well. Well, somebody will come up to me and say, well, I had this experience. How do you explain that? I can't. I wasn't there.
Wait a minute.
I don't
a skeptic
have all
will say that?
Pardon me?
A skeptic would say that to you?
No.
Oh.
If I'm, I would be out talking to people and they know what I write about and what I do, and they'll try to catch me.
Mm.
I had this experience that I saw this and I experienced this, and how do you explain that?
Oh, yeah, that's a classic sort of argument from the true believers. But it's like you just said, how do you?
I can't go anywhere.
You can't go anywhere with that. Mm. So this is sort of, you know. That's kind of where we're at here on the program, where it's, I try to avoid the people that have, just sort of have a story, you know what I mean? Because you can't really, if they have research into a subject, that's great. But mm-hmm. if they have a story, it's like, unless it's a super crazy story. You know, because I have another sort of, this jumps into another sort of area that ties into skepticism and stuff like that. You know, one of your articles was getting people to think deeply. And we talked about earlier sort of like, well, what does it matter to you that they think deeply? My perspective on it all is I've given up on trying to get people to think deeply in the sense that, or I've given up on trying to pull them up to my level or the level of the program in a sense. If they believe everything that comes down the pike, it's great if they listen to the show, but I could live without those people altogether. You know, it's a caveat emptor world, you know, buyer beware.
And there's some people that are going to be, I hate to sort of categorize them this way, but they're lost causes. There's really no sense in talking to them because they're not going to change their mind. And maybe I'd rather talk to this person over here who wants to find out more and who may change their mind. Look at farther with that person.
Right.
You can sort of cycle back to what I talked about in the beginning. When you're talking about nothing but people telling stories, that's the problem I had with the paranormal literature from the beginning. I was so unsatisfied with those stories after story, and I could go nowhere with them.
Mm.
So that was sort of what got me frustrated about it, too. I wanted to see more and better evidence, and I wanted to see somebody sort of come across with a different perspective. A more critical perspective, because just those stories weren't satisfying. I can't do anything with those.
See, I think we have very similar perspectives on this, but we have sort of different ideas on how to deal with it. Do you know what I mean? You sort of want to fix it. You know what I mean? And I would love to fix it, but I've gotten to this cynical point of view where I'm like, I don't see how it can be fixed. But I'm taking steps here. I've got you on the show, so it's, you know, looking to improve the overall quality of getting to the bottom of these mysteries, but within the confines of the paranormal community, I realize that's a difficult task.
If we had this, let's go back to the Loch Ness Monster just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, and we're going to solve this, but it has multiple boring explanations. It's a sturgeon sighting, or it's the seiches, the waves that go back and forth that look like a creature, or it's a school of fish, or whatever. It's got multiple explanations for these different people's eyewitness accounts, but we can get 99% of them attributed to one cause or another. Would you be satisfied with that?
Me personally?
Yeah. As an explanation, okay, Loch Ness Monster is solved. We have
sealed and delivered. We know for sure. We've drained the Loch, and
I'm not saying that would happen, but I'm just using it as a hypothetical example. It has a bunch of mundane explanations to it. Would the paranormal people be satisfied with that?
I would be disappointed but satisfied.
Would you? Because I think a lot of people would be unsatisfied because it's not a good enough answer for them.
Well, if it was a certain thing, then it's game over. I mean, that's sort of my perspective on that scenario. Like I said, I mean, if they drained the lock and they found like 8 sturgeon flopping around, I'd be like, well, all right, that's it. You know, turn out the lights. It's over. It's over for the Loch Ness Monster. You know,
but those who would still grasp onto the idea that at one time there was a plesiosaur living there.
Right, and it escaped into the ocean somehow. It's like you go back and you can't prove that negative. You can't be like, well, no, it didn't escape into the ocean. It's impossible for that to happen. They'd be like, no, here's how it did happen. You'd be like,
right, that's
can't.
Called special pleading, where you try to stick in I need this extra thing to help me explain this in the way I want it to. And what happens to fields like cryptozoology is you get into this special pleading that I call supernatural creep, where they can't explain things through natural means. So they start to resort to things like tulpas and extra dimensions and alien pets and things like that to explain Bigfoot. And you've just left the realm of science at that point. You know, once you say it's not a flesh and blood creature, science has nothing to say about the supernatural. It's outside of natural laws, and we have nothing to say about that.
Well,
but some people are so desperate to hold on to that idea that they creep into that supernatural idea because that's the only way they can get to explain the weird things they've heard.
Well, there's two trains of thought to that, though. There's the first one is that just that you say science has nothing to say about that. I think that's part of the problem in a sense. And the other part is that on the other side of the coin, the problem is you can't explain the unknown with another unknown. Mm-hmm. So perhaps, as I said earlier, maybe we're both wrong. I've sort of put this idea out there onto the show, you know, that, and this is a gross generalization theory, I guess you could call it that. But you know how you can cut off the arm of a starfish and its arm grows back?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someday we'll find out that there's other dimensions that we can access and the Bigfoot can go back and forth between them just like a starfish can grow its arm back.
True.
You know, mm-hmm. So it has a realm in both the supernatural and eventually these things may be able to be explained by science, but the science will be supernatural.
Well, you have to define supernatural very, very specifically. Like a lot of people ask.
You and your semantics.
It's true. A lot of people will exchange paranormal and supernatural, but really they're very different. I mean, supernatural, you're talking about outside of natural laws. We're pretty good on natural laws right now. We understand them pretty well. I don't think we're going to come up with a law that overturns physics. But on the other hand, there is that wiggle room in terms of paranormal. Things could be look like they're supernatural, but really they're paranormal because we just haven't come up with the explanation for it yet. But it would essentially fit and not cross natural laws.
Right.
So the extra dimension, I'm not sure if that's beyond nature. It is now, but maybe we'll figure that out. But, I mean, people, when they're talking about omnipotent entities, you know, the God question is a supernatural question. Science
okay.
has nothing to say about that. That's
right.
Where I'm going with that.
I see.
Or even life beyond death. Spirit, the way that ghosts are defined as spirits that are, you know, the remnants of dead people coming back, that would cross a natural law. So that is supernatural. And maybe there's a paranormal explanation for it, but supernatural, science can't go there because it's outside natural laws. We only operate within natural laws, so we have nothing to say about that. See what I mean, the difference?
Yeah, yeah. I guess what I'm saying is maybe eventually these two will collide in a sense. Well, the understanding of the natural laws will change to the point where we'll actually realize that
there's room.
Right.
Or, okay.
You know what I'm saying? That
mm-hmm.
like I said about the starfish, it's like, well, maybe someone's going to hit a Bigfoot with their car, right? And they, you know, it's half alive. Look, this is getting into really, this is getting into Hollywood territory.
Right?
This is like Harry and Henderson's too. So you throw them in, your trunk, you bring them to the zoo or whatever, and they got them locked up. But then it's like, oh, but somehow the Bigfoot has like this chameleon-like ability where he just blends into the wall, or somehow it can turn itself invisible, and it turns out it has some, you know, animals do weird things. Now, obviously, no other animals out there are turning themselves invisible, but who knows?
Well, we kind of know, but...
we don't know.
Yeah, we're seeing, I mean, some hypotheticals there. Obviously, there's a lot out there we don't know.
Right.
And, you know, otherwise science would be dead because there's nothing left to discover, and that's obviously not true. So, yeah, we have some couple really big discoveries, hopefully in our lifetime. That'll be cool. That's the kind of stuff I look forward to. You never know.
Yeah. I told you we were going down a weird path there, but I guess that was, you know, I guess what I'm saying is maybe we'll learn that there's some kind of abilities that these animals have that we don't know about, so...
Or maybe we'll come up with a different explanation for why people are saying that they're experiencing these things, something right. we didn't think of yet.
Right, because there's also the possibility, and I've given this credence on the program, that it's all, you know, you kind of, you know, you dismissed the Tulpa thing earlier, but this mm-hmm. I feel like there's also the possibility that these things like Bigfoot and ghosts and stuff may be just a creation of the mind, that maybe somehow... You know, if you're in the right place at the right time, you got it on your mind somehow, or you don't have it on your mind, but maybe it's lurking in your subconscious somehow, you know, I don't want to go so far as to say hallucination, but I will, you know, somehow maybe you see things that aren't there.
That, it's not too far-fetched. I mean, some people would take it to be far-fetched, but I mean, I think that...
Is it any more far-fetched than that there's a giant hairy creature walking? You know what I mean? It's actually more plausible based on the science that we know of, right?
Right, yeah, because, you know, people really do have strange things go on with their brains. You know, it really does happen. And we can't imagine waking up one morning and not being able to recognize faces or have no short-term memory anymore. We can't imagine what that's like, but it really does happen.
Right.
So it could be that there is some sort of unique situation that certain people have, and we haven't figured that out yet. I think that's completely plausible. Like I would look at it as, yeah, there's some sort of, I don't know, I mean, electromagnetic fields don't really do this, but if there was some sort of way to affect your brain in that way, where you do feel like you're having this experience and it's so real that you will swear that it's real, that seems really plausible. It's not as exciting as the creature is really there, that we're manufacturing it from our minds, but in a way it's just looking at it from a different direction.
Right, right. Yeah. Plus someone out there would figure out a way to harness it so you could get your...
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You could imagine all kinds of things.
That's fascinating.
Things. Now, I did notice in your writings and on that segment there, you lamented that you've been accused of taking all the fun out of this.
Mm.
And you sort of, it seemed to really resonate with you. So I guess I don't think that that's the case, having talked to you here for almost a couple hours now. But I can see how that's the sort of point of view of the paranormal community on skeptics in general.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I've likened it to, I confess, I am a professional wrestling fan. Nobody's perfect. you know, but I liken it to the people that are like, don't you know that stuff's fake? And it's like, yes, I know it's fake. I don't need you here to tell me that it's
mm-hmm.
fake.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, in a sense, liken it to that when it comes to some skeptics. You know, I don't need you to rub my nose in this fact that, you know, that story about elves attacking some dude in, you know, Pennsylvania wasn't true. It's like, of course it probably wasn't true, but it's a great story.
I see that a lot. Yeah, and it's funny because I like it as a great story, but I look at it from a different angle, mm. and I sort of want it to be something different. So I think when we take these bits of culture and make them our own, we're going to disagree on what to do with them.
Right, right.
And I've had this discussion so often with other paranormal sites where they get mad at me. One person, within like a day of a story coming out, I wrote in their comments, no, it's this, I figured it out. And they're like, couldn't you just wait a day?
Oh, that's pathetic.
Before you posted this? Because we were having so much fun thinking about what it was. And I was like, what do you mean? Is this cool? We figured it out. I was so disappointed.
Yeah.
So that's the way my brain works. It's not the way everybody else's works. So it's going to be different. We're all not going to be happy with each other, but, you know.
No, but I mean, I don't, you know, I don't decry your perspective, I guess. You know?
Well, that's good. I mean, some people do.
Right, right. But the people in the skeptical community, they shouldn't. To borrow a line here from one of your articles, you say that the bulk of popular cryptozoology is, I think you extend it to the rest of the paranormal, is a jumble of the same poor quality evidence, a ton of hype, rampant speculation, and unfounded assumption. Those are four of my favorite things. So, I mean, come on. Rampant speculation, a ton of hype? Sign me up. Where can I get this stuff?
Yeah.
But from your perspective, you're like, these are bad things.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, I'm not going to go out on a Saturday night and drink till I'm wasted because
we are very
that.
Different people. Then
see what I mean? Some people think that's fun, and I don't think it's fun. So yeah, I mean, it's part of our experience. We're all different.
Mm.
I guess it's in terms of your final goal. I mean, if your goal is to show that in that article, is cryptozoology a science or not? And my opinion is it can be. It's not, but it can be, as it stands today.
I think it's en route to becoming a science.
And I think it's going the opposite direction.
Wow.
I think that cryptozoology is fascinating in terms of folklore and culture.
Mm.
that's where I find the most fascinating aspect of it. I don't think these are real creatures. I think it's people interpreting them in their own way. And so it's not about the flesh and blood creature. It's not about biology. It's about people's perception. And I find people's perception fascinating.
Well, the reason I say that is because, as we talked about earlier, there's a sort of move towards the DNA thing. I'm not talking about the Melba Ketchum fiasco, but the Brian Sykes stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think cryptozoology is just like one good breakthrough away from at least being sort of moved from the kiddie table to the adult table, or maybe just getting a seat at the kiddie table, you know, of mainstream science.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's worthy of talking about because it's got so many facets in there to discuss. But you're talking about, like, again, each one of these creatures has their own context. Like, my favorite cryptozoology book of all time is Ben Radford's Tracking the Chupacabra, because he goes through it, a very complicated story, and pulls out a very reasonable conclusion that now has held up for quite a while. So I that's the kind of scholarship that I look for. When I was talking about cryptozoology being a pseudoscience, I'm not seeing the scholarship that I would want to see in order to make it sound legitimate. Hmm. I think it can be. I just don't think people are doing it.
Okay.
So, I mean, if more scientists get involved, like if you're familiar with Dr. Darren Naish doing some stuff on cryptids, he does a fantastic job. But he's the one who says, no, the Montauk Monster is a raccoon. And everyone says, oh, really? You know, but it is. And I think it's cool that we misinterpreted a dead, bloated raccoon to be a mutant from a radiation facility. I think that's cool.
Absolutely.
I don't care if it's a raccoon. It's just a neat story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, to go back to the point about, you know, I'm not exactly a fan of the poor quality evidence, but the ton of hype and the rampant speculation, that's sort of fun. But eventually
fun,
you need
yeah.
to get to, and the unfounded assumptions, but you need to get, you know, eventually you need to get over that. I mean, that's certainly where I am.
If you want the real answer, yeah, you
right.
have to get over that.
Right.
You have to get serious.
And I think we're both in agreement that there's this... There's just the, you know, I have no use for the true believers or the people. Like I said, it's the perspective on this show is, people have written in and said, you know, what I like about the show is you never actually tell us what you actually believe in. So it's like my attitude is that it's up to the people who listen to the show to figure out what's right and what's wrong.
So like, let them decide.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I
wrote an article on that.
Okay, well, what's your take on that, then? You probably disagree with that.
No. I mean, it's very plausible to say you decide. However, there's problems with that because of the information that we're fed.
Hmm.
We're not always given the right information. We're not always given all the information. So
right.
when you have, you know, the Unsolved Mysteries-type program on TV giving you an edited, recreated version of the story and then saying, you decide, not a fair assessment.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're the one that's going to go research it and look into it, yes, you decide that you've done a fair job of pulling all the information you need to make a reasonable conclusion. But when you're sitting in your living room watching TV and the ghost hunters are telling you, oh, you can make up your own mind. No, because you just gave me a concocted story and some poor evidence and... I'm not getting the whole story, so to say me decide, that's ludicrous.
I guess the point then is that it's not just, oh, hey, you go decide this. I guess my attitude is it's your responsibility to go figure this out for yourself, because it's not my responsibility to tell you the chances are what you're hearing is crazy talk.
Sure. All we're doing is sort of feeding out these ideas, and whether people want to take them in or reject them is their responsibility.
Yeah, because I just think that I don't want to hold people's hands through this whole thing. You know, I think there's plenty of I go back to that. There's these core sort of nuggets of what I think is going on. Mm-hmm. But it's branched off into so much craziness that I still enjoy talking to the people that go down the crazy roads.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have something to learn from them, too.
I think so, yeah. Absolutely. Plus, in a way, as odd as it might sound, I feel like, and you said earlier you think the skeptics think that the paranormal people are winning, but I sometimes feel like that there are some points of view that are so out there that they're not given a fair enough shake that it's nice to give them the platform to discuss their stuff, even if I don't believe it. I mean, I've had people on the program where I don't believe what they're talking mm-hmm. about, so, but I'm willing to listen to it.
The drawback with something like that is that you will appeal to part of the audience who will accept it as true.
Hmm.
And we can get back to the Sandy Hook truthers. That got media coverage. It probably should have been just thrown under the carpet. Please don't give these people media attention.
Right.
But they got the media attention, and now more people are thinking, oh, it's got media attention. Maybe there's something to it. And we have a tendency to do that. Familiarity, we think that there's then some grain of truth to it. Well, you know, that's not true. I mean, people used to believe in witches causing crop failures and diseases and stuff. It was a widespread belief. It doesn't make it true.
Exactly.
You know? So, it doesn't work on democracy there. But I think people have a tendency to see things, and if they become familiar with them, they think that there's something to it. So I think just giving certain people a platform can be bad. Unless you have a way to counter that. So, it's tricky.
I suppose. I'm open to, you know, feedback from the listeners who say this is...
Right, and you don't want to say, don't print this book because it's too out there.
Right.
You know, that's censorship, and that's not right either. So, yeah, I sort of wish... The solution would be just to get everybody in the world to start thinking a little bit more critically, but you know that's not going to happen. But you know it's you're going to have some people that just buy into this with absolutely no evidence just because it sounds good to them or it sounds convenient. So I think that's what we saw when we had this truther thing is that it's so good of a story that some people just adopted it for no other reason than it was a good story. And
right, and there's I think there's an element of like, if you look at it from pull further back on the history of all this, it's like 9/11 is 10 years old. That's the truth. The 9/11 truth thing sort of ground to a halt, and mm-hmm. there's this subconscious need within a pocket of the community to. Latch on to a perceived big lie.
Mm.
So they've even adopted the 9/11 nomenclature.
Right.
You know, they're Sandy Hook truthers.
Yeah.
Which is so, it's embarrassing in so many ways, but mm-hmm. I think that maybe that might be what's going on with a lot of that too.
Yeah, I think it's got a political spin to it and a social spin to it. You know, we're in economic times and that are just people are struggling and they may be disagreeing with the politics and this had some political implications for people's gun rights and stuff. So I think it's again one of those fairly complicated mixes of things going on where people are going to either buy into this belief or not.
As we've talked, you know, both sides are, there are zealots on both sides. So the people mm-hmm. who are like, you know, not specifically about the Sandy Hook thing, but there are people who are just so super adamant about the anti-conspiracy end. But there's also, and I've bemoaned this on the show numerous times, where I'm so annoyed with the people on the conspiracy end, and this goes into sort of what maybe might motivate them. It's that they always have this sort of thing like where they say, you know, you don't know the whole story. They're in the know and you're not, is the point mm-hmm. I'm trying to make. So there's this undercurrent of, you're dumb, I'm smart, I know what's really going on, and here's what it is.
And they feel special because they have that special knowledge,
right.
too. Yeah.
And I think that perspective can be flipped on to the skeptic side as well when you get to people who are just super adamant about it and are like, you're dumb, you believe in this crazy stuff, you know, don't you know it's not real?
It's especially true, like I said, with the atheism.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
People, they're very smug, and I find that offensive, and I can't go there. I just don't like that attitude of being so smug, and I'm superior to you because of this belief. I think of my evolution of thinking about the paranormal and how the world works as very much a pendulum. I mean, when I was younger and I believed almost everything, and then, you know, through college, the pendulum swung way to the other end and I believed nothing. I was, I denied everything had any merit to it at all.
Yeah.
And then the pendulum swung back a little bit less to the other side and then a little bit less to the other side. And I think I'm really getting close to the middle right now where I've really examined both sides, and now I can understand if I come across a person who believes something completely different than me, I'm okay with that. It doesn't reflect upon who I am. It's not my issue. I could accept them for who they are, you know, because it doesn't affect my worldview. I've thought about the whole thing. I'm still thinking about it, but I mean, I've thought through a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, that's fine. It's not going to affect me if you believe in this thing.
Good.
The only time where it gets a little weird is when, you know, people try to inject their view into something that affects you. You know, creationism in schools and anti-vax and
right.
Things
yeah.
like that bother me, because then you're impinging on other people's rights and freedom. So
exactly. Well, there's, you know, we talked earlier about sort of these snake oils. And sort of these cure-alls and, medicinal hoaxes is a whole different thing than, I guess you could say, philosophical differences of opinion on the paranormal.
Who disagrees with the idea of consumer protection?
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's a good thing. So skeptics have tried to go there.
That's a good thing, because I think the people in the paranormal community, either they're true believers and they're drinking this shit, or they're the people like me who are like, what are you, crazy? Don't drink that shit. So, but there's no one sort of in the middle who's like, listen, I got to get the word out about this.
Mm.
Because, well, I'm sure there are, but it's sort of not a really prominent, active part of the community. It's either you're drinking it or you're like, don't drink that, man. Don't drink that.
Yeah, because it does seem sort of harmless. You know, people taking homeopathy pills or whatever. It's like, oh, what's the harm? The harm is that one day you can get so into homeopathy that when you really get sick, you won't go to the doctor. You'll go to your naturopath or whatever and fail to be treated for something seriously. So there is that slippery slope argument. A lot of people do ask, what's the harm? And by the way, there is a whole website, whatstheharm.net.
Yes.
Where you can go on and you actually can see that some of these things do cause real harm. People have died because of their belief in ghosts or alternative medicine, obviously, or their belief in the occult. You know, children have died. So
who died because they believed in ghosts?
Like, there were
like ghost hunters that hurt themselves running
that's
around.
That's right, ghost hunters that hurt themselves. There were kids that were hit by a train and people who were injured during ghost hunts because they were in unsafe situations. You know, they were walking around in an old, dilapidated house and they weren't taking proper care. They shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, part of me says, you know, it's sort of like the old thing where you say, you know, don't talk about politics, religion, or sex in the at the bar. Sort of in my mind, it's like, well, there's plenty of people that have gotten hurt or killed doing stupid
True.
Things, having sex on train tracks or something, something moronic. Like it's not the ghost hunting that's to blame. It's just the stupidity of people.
Right. Or in another way that it causes harm is a lot of people do spend a lot of time and money on it and get rather obsessed.
Right.
With the idea.
But then again, you know, they could be. In a sense, as long as they're like still can feed their family and everything, I have no problem if someone wants to spend all their disposable income on ghost hunting trinkets. Because if they didn't, maybe they'd be doing it with model trains or something.
I see.
So it's fair, you know. It's I believe me, I stand against moronic behavior. So that's really what is the problem, I guess you could say.
Yeah, extreme behavior. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like the guy who was trying to promote or trying to prompt a Bigfoot sighting and had a little bit too much to drink and jumped out into the highway and got hit by a car. You know, not a good move and a bit too extreme. So, what's the harm in pretending to be Bigfoot? You could die. I mean, it's just one of those strange stories that could happen to anybody, even if they weren't wearing a Bigfoot suit. But it just came out because he was trying to do something that we found interesting and rather weird. And one point that some skeptics will bring up, and even some paranormalists will bring up, is the idea of the Darwin Awards. Mm. This person was so stupid that they removed themselves from the gene pool. They won a Darwin Award. You know, they right. died because they were so stupid. I hate that idea. I hate the concept of the Darwin Awards. I do not like making fun of people who made bad decisions, because we all make bad decisions.
Right.
And they did that to that guy in Montana who was in the Bigfoot suit and got killed. They said, oh, winner of the Darwin Award, he's so stupid. I find that appalling. And I would never do that to somebody, because it's demeaning to humanity to say that, yeah, you're stupid, you deserve to die. That's horrifying. But some people feel that it's okay for people to be demonized like that. You're so stupid, you don't deserve to be around. So, yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, that's kind of messed up. I would never say that, like, someone deserves to, you know, someone deserved to get hit by a car because they were dressed in a Bigfoot suit.
Right, or that they deserved to get hurt because they were out, researching something. That's terrible. It's so misunderstanding the human condition that I find that appalling.
Right, but is it okay to make fun of the actual behavior? Is it okay to be like, that's a stupid thing to do? You're not, you know, you don't deserve to be hurt or,
right.
you know, vilified or demonized or humiliated or whatever, but, you know, what you did was pretty dumb.
That's kind of how I felt about those kids that went to the Congo. I mean, telling them, do you have any idea what it's like to be, you know, in the jungle and in a situation where you may run out of potable water and you may be approached by
warlords
with guns who want to kidnap you. And I felt like, gosh, this is such, they're so naive, they're so stupid to think that they could, that this is going to be a cakewalk. But off you go. It's your choice.
Yeah.
Best of luck. I seriously, when I researched that story, I felt that there was a serious possibility I was going to see the results that they were missing.
They were missing, yeah.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
Or they were missing with all the money. It was just a scam.
Yeah, that too. I wonder if they returned that money to Kickstarter.
I don't think so.
But I mean, people are free to live their lives, but what I try to do in my daily life and with writing and presenting the skeptical viewpoints is give people some tools to think about these things a little bit harder. Try to think about, here are some tools to think about this, because maybe then you can make a better decision for yourself or your family. So I think that's sort of what I'm out to do is to give them those tools or another perspective to think about.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, exactly, because people need to, you know, like I say, buyer beware, but people need to think, I stress buyer beware, to try and keep telling people that you need to really, you know, think about what you're going to do, if you're going to give money to somebody, or if you're going to, you know, support some kind of cause here, or drink some kind of, you know, alleged cure-all, or change over your whole diet or something.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's consequences.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you've got Doubtful News. I really do love this website. I wasn't just, I really am going to make this a daily stop. And the listeners should too, because, you know, as we were lamenting on the show, on the Year in Review show, that the paranormal media and the mainstream media doesn't do the follow-ups on these stories. You know,
yeah,
that's
and they
the
often
problem.
Yeah, they often don't do the best job in covering them in the first place. They miss things or they make mistakes. So what I try to do is include links or additional information for people who want to follow up on that topic. Maybe take them to places they hadn't been to on the internet and see some different perspectives on that information. And I really, my goal for the site was to make it appealable to everyone. It was there because I wanted a different, more skeptical viewpoint on this, but I really wanted people who enjoyed these stories to come on and discuss them with us because I like those different perspectives. So I want people who like these topics to come and read these stories and participate in the discussions. I really want that.
Right. And to, you know, allay people's fears about maybe, you know, oh, she's a skeptic. I find myself in agreement. You know, I'm looking at the headline here for the, right now. It says slow news day, light and picture of deer equals UFO. And you link to an article from the San Antonio Express News that essentially
disappointing.
Yeah. Has an alleged UFO, you know, in this picture of a deer. Mm-hmm. And so this is the kind of news I actually appreciate. Because then I can just, you know, I'm already dismissing this stuff, but at least mm-hmm. now when people bother me about it, and they can be like, well, what did you think of this story? I can be like, well, no, it's actually this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was kind of the point, and has been the point of the Year in Review show, where it's like we're inundated with such garbage news that it's hard to really pull the best nuggets out that it might actually mean something.
Yeah, I've been like that with the, and there have been a few good UFO videos or pictures that I've posted because I don't know how to explain them, but other people in the audience, you know, crowdsource your questions and they will give you great insights you've never thought of. So I do that a lot. I post this and say, what do you think? What could this be? Could it be this? Let me hear your thoughts. And they'll give me great feedback. I have great commentators. And then, but that's like me with the Bigfoot news because I follow the Bigfoot news really, really closely.
Yeah.
And it's so much garbage. It's another video or it's another, blob squatch or it's another howl in the woods. I can't, there's nothing I can get out of that I haven't seen already. So it is hard to pick out the important stuff out of all the dross. There, you know.
Right. Exactly. I've given up on sort of, I mean, I keep an eye on the daily news of the paranormal, but mm-hmm. my sort of attitude is unless it's like burst into the mainstream news cycle and lasts more than 24 to 48 hours, it's worthless pretty much. I'm super cynical even.
Well,
I've turned it all off.
Sort of do the same thing because I want if something shows up on one of these citizen journalist sites like Gather or The Examiner.
Oh, please.
I often say I don't pay any attention to it. If it shows up in mainstream media, more like even if the local news stations, but it comes up on a news station, then I realize that more people have seen it and maybe more people will be Googling it or wanting to find out
right.
more about it, and then I'll pick it up. But some people will email me links to stories from, like I said, Examiner, Gather, what's another one? Daily Mail.
Yeah.
From the UK. And I won't touch those. Or I'll go and I'll look and see if there's an actual, better source for that story.
Mm.
Because I can't possibly report every paranormal story that comes out. Because they're not worth it. They're not worth thinking about.
See, I told you right at the beginning,
yeah.
we're a lot more
similar. Common ground.
Yeah. Well, what's next for you? Doppel News is growing. It's really amazing, and I'm psyched that we've had you on the show, and I'm going to spread the word about this website far and wide. So,
well, I really appreciate that. I love doing the website. I have a few wonderful people who help me, and what I do is I contribute to podcasts here and there, little bits of pieces, and we do that Virtual Skeptics, which is just sort of us bunch of friends getting together and being silly and talking about the news. And I'll be blogging, and I also write for Skeptical Inquirer. I actually did a long piece on the Melba Ketchum DNA thing, you know, and I was the one who researched the whole thing, and that will be coming out in Skeptical Inquirer, and Skeptical Briefs will have the longer ironically enough, Skeptical Briefs will have the longer version of the story because it was a lot of information that I dug through, so I did that. And I do some book reviews, and I'm sure you'll see me popping up here and there and
nice.
Various places.
Now, it's interesting. It's interesting because at the end of the program here, I always end up asking folks who haven't done so yet if they have plans on putting their research out into a book. You know, it's interesting. This could be a whole other line of discussion, but we're running quite a ways over what we planned.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the fetishization of of writing mm-hmm. a book in the paranormal community. But have you given any consideration to, you know, a book of your own?
Sure. I have a couple ideas. In fact, I did start writing one a number of years ago, which was about mysterious natural phenomenon, which is probably my favorite thing, anomalous natural phenomenon. And I started writing that because I saw that there wasn't one that was aimed towards young adult readers or you know, teenagers who were interested in that type of topic, or the ones that were out there were really bad. So that would be something I would be interested in doing, and also the idea of just living a life that is enlightened by some critical thinking tools. How you can raise your kids with a little bit more critical thinking attitude, and how you can get through life evaluating all the information that we see getting thrown at us every day in a more skeptical way.
Well, we definitely need more critical thinking. That's that's a problem beyond just the paranormal, as this
definitely is
crazy football player story goes. You know.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, for everything,
people need to ask questions about what they're being told. A lot of people don't.
Yep.
On that note, we've talked for quite a while, and it's time to say goodbye here for now, because I would love to have you back on the show in the future to explore these issues even more mm-hmm. and get into all these different topics, and maybe have you on next year towards the end of the year, either bring you into the year in review episode or have you contribute something in that regard, so we can sort
sure.
of keep this concept evolving, you know, about what we're dealing with these mysteries. I've
yeah.
thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. And
oh, me too.
Like I said, in the emails leading up to this and early in the conversation, I think we're way closer than maybe we may have thought if we just sort of passed each other in the proverbial mm-hmm. internet hallway. So it's been great to have you on the show, and you know, I look forward to reading your stuff as we go forward.
Thanks, Tim. I really enjoyed it, too.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to Sharon Hill for coming on the show. Be sure to stop by her website, www.doubtfulnews.com. I think many, many BOA Audio listeners would enjoy it quite a bit. So be sure to check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we've got a handful of emails here from a variety of listeners, so let's dive on in. The first one comes from Robert, no hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. My wife and I discovered your show a short time ago, and we've become hooked. We've been poring through the archives, listening to them nonstop, and thought we'd make a couple of comments. We love the Paul Stonehill interview. It was one of the best you've done, and we'd like to hear him on again. Always nice to hear from someone in another country, because they have a unique perspective. Some guests we don't mind hearing from again. For instance, we really like Nick Redfern, so it's a pleasure to hear you interview him. We are wondering why you haven't interviewed David Weatherly. Like Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Weatherly is a gold mine of information on all aspects of the paranormal, since he's been in the field so very long. Keep up the great work. BOA is quickly becoming our favorite program, and we really like your style of interviewing, since you go beyond the standard questions that so many hosts seem to repeat ad nauseum. Robert, no hometown listed. Thank you very much for writing in, Robert. Thank you for your kind words about the program. I hope you and your wife have enjoyed digging through the BOA audio archives. I enjoyed the Paul Stonehill interview quite a bit as well, and would love to have him on the program again. And definitely would like to get back on the international guest beat as time goes on. We've got an international guest actually in the back catalog right now that hasn't been posted yet. So we're going to go international at least one more time And I've got a couple of other guests that may qualify, I guess you could say, as international guests. But definitely it is an area I would like to dig into further, as we have done in the past, talking to paranormal researchers all over the globe about their respective countries and the phenomena that can be found there. With regards to returning guests, obviously I would love to have Nick Redfern on the show again and again and again. He is somebody that I just really love talking to. So I am sure that it's only a matter of time before Nick is back on BOA Audio. Really, though, I try to find a balance here between new guests and returning guests. I could sit back and do a whole season of returning guests, and it is something actually that I've considered in the past, but that may be for the future, because I do love bringing these new voices to the program. Speaking of which, Robert, you may be psychic or something like that, because I can tell you that I have been in talks with David Weatherly. We have pinned down a date and time, so David Weatherly will be appearing on the program, provided that everything goes as planned. So stay tuned for that, and thank you for the guest suggestion, as well as your kind words about the program. Our next email comes from Randy, who contacted me on Facebook and simply asks, "Hello, sir. I was wondering if you would entertain the idea of a show on giants." Randy. Randy, how long have you been listening to this program, my friend? Of course I would entertain the idea of a show on giants. Just the thought of it sounds awesome. I've tried to track down Steve Quayle and get him on the program a few times, but he is reticent about doing podcast interviews. So if anyone can suggest an alternative guest on Giants, I would definitely be down with looking into their stuff and possibly having them on the program. Also, I don't know, this is only amusing to me, I guess, but part of the reason why I picked Randy's email here is because he contacted me on Facebook through the Banal of America Facebook page. So I figured, hey, we can at least say where Randy's from, because he's on Facebook here, so it must list his hometown. So I clicked on Randy's profile, and Randy is not even my Facebook friend. He just likes Banal of America. So thank you, Randy, for liking Banal of America. Hopefully someday we can become friends so I can find out where you live. That sounds terrifying. Next email comes from Eric. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. It's short and sweet. He says simply, "Just listen to your podcast with Paul Kimball. I think it may have been the best podcast ever. Keep up the good work, Eric." Wow, Eric. Thank you very much for your kind words. I'm not entirely convinced that this isn't Paul Kimball writing to me under a ghost address. So, Eric, are you Paul Kimball? And if you are Paul Kimball, why are you writing to me with this high praise for your own program? Just kidding, of course, but thank you very much for writing in, Eric. We got a lot of great feedback on the Paul Kimball interview. People really enjoyed it quite a bit and overwhelmingly mentioned that it did feel like they were just listening to a conversation between two buddies at the bar, which is really the goal of the program here as we've evolved into Season 7 to try and give you the best pure, organic conversations and interviews with the leading lights of paranormal research, and as you can see here from this week's episode, people who are looking at the paranormal from different angles as well. Thank you for writing in, Eric. Glad you enjoyed the interview with Paul Kimball. Stay tuned. I'm sure Paul will resurface on BOA Audio at some point in the future. And now let me plug the Banal of America Facebook page and take care of the shout-outs, which were promised at the end of the last edition of the show. I tried to break the bottleneck since we were stuck at 898 likes, and so Gary M. ended up being like number 899, Oleg C. was like number 900, but as was my concern and fear, there was a bit of chicanery, perhaps. There was some strange turn of events, because shortly after I announced congrats to Gary and Oleg, we dipped back down to 899, and then Clifford D. became like number 900. I don't know if he did that intentionally or not. Kudos to him for his quick thinking. Therefore, he earns the shout-out as well. So Gary M., Oleg C., and Clifford D., thank you for your likes, which put us over the top of 900. As of now, we are at 910, so we're over the barrier of 900, and we can see 1,000 on the horizon. Hopefully, we can break that by the end of February. The likes just keep adding up, thanks to all the great folks out there who have found us on Facebook, such as listener Michael Ball, who wrote to me because he was like number 903. Here's what he says. I was the 903 like instead of 900, but you can still give me a shout-out at the end of the show, especially since I have listened to every show at least once, and several of them multiple times. BOA is one of three podcasts that I listen to on a daily basis. That's how I stay sane at work, as well as on my 45-minute commute each day daily. Ouch. Radio Misterioso is one of the other two. I do want to thank you for all your hard work you put into making each and every show the best and most entertaining it can possibly be. You rock. Michael Ball. So I wrote Michael back, said thank you very much. Of course, I would include him in the shoutouts. And he wrote back and said, I will be listening with anticipation as always. Yes, I'm one of the ones that listens to your thoughts after the guest is gone, and you sign off for the night. So Michael is a hardcore BOA audio listener. He's literally listening right now. Hopefully not outside my door, but he is listening to the program right now. So thank you, Michael, for your kind words and for your enduring support of the program. I am just really happy that we've managed to help you get through each day at work and that long commute. That sounds painful, 45 minutes each way. My goodness, that's 90 minutes a day, Michael, that you are just driving. That's maddening. My heart goes out to you, sir. And nonetheless, thank you for your support of the program. Thank you for your like on Facebook. And thank you for your kind words. That wraps up listener feedback this week. Big thanks to Michael, Eric, Randy, and Robert for writing in. And if you would like to be a part of future installments of listener feedback, here are the ways you can do so. You can simply head on over to Banal of America and click the contact button, or write to boaaudio@hotmail.com. Additionally, you can head on over to the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. It is BOA's paranormal playground, where we discuss the world of pop culture as well as esoterica. Beyond that, of course, I should mention that I am on Facebook and Twitter, so just punch in Banal, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. That should bring my profile up right away. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. Speaking of Twitter, I'm starting to wonder if I should start tweeting again. So, folks who are listening, if you're big Twitter heads and you want me to start tweeting again, I've kind of got an itch to tweet. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm itching to tweet. So maybe I should revive my Twitter presence beyond simple Banal of America plugs. So Twitter heads out there, write to me and let me know if you want me to start tweeting. And of course, we already plugged ad nauseum the BOA Facebook page. Head on over there, punch in Banal of America, like us, and get insights into the program and news about the latest developments at Banal of America. I love hearing from the listeners. I love hearing your thoughts on the program, good or bad. I am very much interested in hearing your thoughts on this week's installment of the program, since it is so different from anything we've ever done on the show. And even beyond that, some of your thoughts on the show in general, I'd love to hear it, and I'd love to include your correspondence on future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Up next, it is time for the thanks portion of the show. Please allow me to take a moment here and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. A lot of stuff going on behind the scenes at BOA right now. First of all, we got an all-new Paranormal Apostate from Bruce Pretty that has been posted at Banal of America since the last edition of this show. Check that out. It is kind of in keeping with this installment of the program featuring Sharon Hill. It is Bruce Pretty's defense of SETI. Often you've heard on the program Our good friend Stan Friedman called them the silly effort to investigate Bruce Priddy defends SETI in the new Paranormal Apostate. And as I teased just now, there is a lot going on behind the scenes at Banal of America. I am currently working with some folks to revitalize the online presence of BOA. I really want to reshape the website, make it a little more user-friendly on my end, make it a little more workable for the contributors, and just give it a fresh coat of paint. So our good friend and webmaster Jeremy Boston is taking a step back. He's going to handle a lot of the graphics for the website, but we're currently in talks with a variety of people to come on board and help us redesign Banal of America and hopefully just give it a little boost, a little shot of adrenaline as we roll through the beginning of 2013. Stay tuned to BOA on Facebook for news on that. And, of course, keep an eye on banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, for paranormal news and opinion. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to the Banal of America franchise. How do you do that? That's simple. There are two ways to do so. You can head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But what if you don't trust the internet and you want to help us out via a snail mail donation? Well, you are in luck because we have a P.O. box for just that purpose. You can send your donation to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass., 01866, and the complete address can be found at Banal of America under the PayPal button. And bear in mind, if you send us a donation, please make it payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America. And please include some means of correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for your donation. As always, it bears repeating, my friends, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of the program, we are returning to our esoteric roots in a big way as we welcome a pioneer in the world of paranormal research, the crypto hunter himself, John Rhodes. He is the man who really popularized the reptilian theory. He really put reptoids on the map, and then so many other people in the world of esoterica picked up his research, co-opted it, twisted it around, turned it around, and did a whole bunch of their own things with it. But John Rhodes is really the guy that put reptoids on the map. He does not do a lot of podcast interviews, but he was more than happy to come on Banal of America, because he is very familiar with our work. And I teased about this episode like way back in late November and December. It is a classic, my friends. It is really one I think folks are going to be thrilled with, and one that I have been dying to roll out for the BOA audio listeners. It has been burning a hole on my hard drive because it is so hot, and I cannot wait to get it out there for folks. I've listened to about half of it so far in the editing process, and I am captivated by it, and I was there. So I cannot wait for the BOA audio listeners to tune in for that one. That's coming at you on the next edition of the program. We'll discuss the terrestrial reptoid hypothesis and the reptilian theory with paranormal pioneer John Rhodes. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Big, big thanks once again to Sharon Hill for coming on the show. Check out DoubtfulNews.com, my friends. Additionally, big thanks to Robert, Randy, Eric, and Michael for contributing to BOA Audio Listener Feedback. And, of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the ones who tune in to the very end of the program. You guys are awesome. Thank you for your enduring support of this program. It is truly humbling and appreciated. Thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.